All right, everybody. So during Chazara week, the request was made, I think, by Ephraim Tepler that we discuss different issues of kashrus that we're not going to get to in Bas Bechalav and Taroves and Machalei Akum. So there are a lot of other areas of kashrus that we don't get to. So maybe we'll spend a day where we'll talk about the kashrus of fish, and maybe we'll spend a day where we'll talk about whatever. I have to figure out what exactly the top five or six topics are going to be. But for today, I thought a good place to start, because this is very much Lamaisa, and it comes up a lot this time of year as well, is the issue of Stam Yenam, and the issue of alcoholic beverages in general. I'm not going to get into the issue of drinking together with Nachrim. That is an Isser, and that's a major problem that comes up at holiday parties and the like, where people ask the Shaila if they're allowed to go to their office holiday party. The answer very often is, if that's where you need to go to get your bonus, so then yes, you can go to the holiday party, but do not have a drink there. Whether you can drink non-alcoholic beverages at such parties is a discussion in Poskim. Rav Shacht is very machmir about this, whereas most other Poskim are makil about it. It really goes back to the Chachmas Adam versus pretty much everybody else, where even having a coffee in a coffee house, Rav Shacht thinks you're not allowed to sit down and have a coffee in the Starbucks, whereas other Poskim are more makil about that issue. But we're going to stick to alcoholic beverages and the kashrus issues that relate to alcoholic beverages. So the first thing is just an introduction of what is Stam Yenam and why is Stam Yenam. Like, why is there an Isra of Stam Yenam? So before we get to the Isra of Stam Yenam, there is an Isra of intermarriage. A Jew is not allowed to marry a non-Jew. That should be news to nobody. The Rama quotes from a Ramban that when a Jewish man marries a non-Jewish woman, it is Yaharik Val Yavar. In the opposite, if it's a non-Jewish man marrying a Jewish woman, it's not Yarek Val Yavar, but it's very, very bad. It is very much Asir. The difference, of course, being that when it's a Jewish woman, at least the children are going to be Jewish, so it's not the end of the line. When it's a non-Jewish woman that's marrying a Jewish man, so that means the offspring, of course, are not going to be Jewish, and that used to be the practice in the Jewish community, is that people would sit Shiva when someone married outside of the Jewish community. When someone married a non-Jew, the family would sit Shiva. That's not so much the style anymore, but that's what they used to do, because this is considered something that was quite terrible. So there is this Isser, Yaharik Val Yavar, perhaps, of marrying a non-Jew. So because Chazal were so concerned about intermarriage, so they introduced a whole series of Isurim that were aimed toward preventing intermarriage. Two of them we're going to learn about at length later in the year. They're part of our Machalei Akum section of what we're going to be learning this year, and that is Bishul Akum and Pas Akum. Right? Those are certainly we're going to discuss in detail. Bishul Akum was a very early gezeirah, to the point that some of the Amoraim, we'll see in the sugyas of Maseches Avodah Zarah, were under the impression that it was an Issur D'oraisa. So this must have been very, very early. We, of course, passing it's not an Issur D'oraisa, it's an Issur D'rabbanan, but a very early Issur D'rabbanan. And there's an Issur of Pas Akum, which is its application is somewhat limited to us, because we're makil on Pas Palter. That if the person that's making the bread is doing it to sell the bread, is doing it to make a living, so that's and not out of friendliness, so we're makel that it's pas palter. Excuse me, we're machmir and pas palter during the Aseres Mechuva. When the Mishnah Berurah says on Shabbos and Yantiv, we should try to be machmir and pas palter as well. That's the second issur. We'll get to that in much more detail later on in the year. But the final issur, the third issur that Chazal instituted, is the issur of yayin. That yayin from a non-Jew is issur, because that will lead to intermarriage. Now, to be clear, there is very often a lot of confusion. People say, no, you're not allowed to have yayin from a non-Jew because it's yayin esach. Yayin esach is issur. It's the menasechit to avodah zarah. Stam yayinim is not yayin esach. In fact, stam yayinim is not even on account of yayin esach. Stam yayinim is issur because of chasnus, because it will lead to intermarriage. Where does yayin nesach come into the picture? So where yayin nesach comes into the picture is the Balei Tosfos right, Maseches Avodah Zarah. It's an expansion of the issur of stam yayinim, meaning stam yayinim to prevent intermarriage asks us from drinking the wine of the Chavim. But once they made that gezeira to asr drinking it, they also asr'd it b'hana'ah as well, out of a far-fetched chashash of Yayin Nesach. Meaning, the concern that the wine that you happen to be buying in the store is Yayin Nesach, that was actually in the Snasech Lavodazara, is so minuscule, it's such a tiny concern, it's a Milsel Shchicha. Milsel Shchicha lo Gozer Be'Rabbanan, the Rabbanan never would have been Gozer, an Isser on account of that minimal concern that maybe it's Nisnasech. But, once it's Aser anyway, because it's because of Chasnus, so then Chazal expanded the Isser to say, you know what, because of that minor concern, once there's a gezeira in place anyway, we can expand the gezeira to not only include an Isser Shtia, but an Isser Hana'a as well. So that's what they did. It's unlikely it wouldn't be the basis of an independent gezeira, but it's enough to add an existing gezeira. So if wine is manufactured by Jews, and a non-Jew handles the wine, that's also included in the Isser. That's a further expansion, meaning the Isser of Stam Yenam originally Mishum Chasnus should have nothing to do with whether a non-Jew touches the wine or handles the wine or stirs the wine. It should only be about whether the non-Jew made the wine. Is it Yayin Shel Nachri? If it's a wine company that's owned by a Jew and non-Jewish workers handle the wine, that should not have been included in the original Gezerah. It's only in the expansion of the Gezerah that was made on account of the concern of Yayin Nesach. That's where we aser even when it was handled by a non-Jew. So if non-Jew actually had been menasech yayin l'avodah zarah, then it would really be aser bahana, and it would be aser if he's menasech. Now there are four things. Whenever it comes to an isra of avodah zarah, there are four things that become aser bahana related to an avodah zarah. There's the avodah zarah itself, the actual avodah zarah. There are sugis in avodah zarah about all these things. There's noy avodah zarah. There's that which is like the jewelry to decorate the avodah zarah, to dress up the avodah zarah. There's tashmishe avodah zarah, that which you use to serve the avodah zarah. You take a frying pan to burn the incense in front of the avodah zarah. I'm not trying to give you a lesson on how to do avodah zarah, but you get the idea that there are certain things that you do that one would do, not you, but one would do if they were interested in violating avodah zarah. So tashmishe avodah zarah are those that serve the practical benefit of aiding in the service of the avodah zarah. And then there's the tekrovas avodah zarah, that which is offered as a gift to avodah zarah. So the noy avodah zarah and the mishamshe avodah zarah are subject to bittul of a nachri. If a nachri says I'm mevatel its status of an avodah zarah, so good, so the status is batel, it is no longer going to be avodah zarah. That which is asr bahana'a, the bittul will make mutter bahana'a. So if you have the actual idol, the noy, the tashmishe avodah zarah, all of that can become mutter bahana'a simply by a nachri being mevatel. Now a Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah shel nachri, but a nachri can be mevatel his own avodah zarah. So if you have avodah zarah shel nachri, and the nachri says, I no longer view this as avodah zarah, I no longer view it as a deity, or the noy avodah zarah, no, it should now be regular jewelry that my wife will wear, it's not going to be noy avodah zarah. That frying pan is no longer for burning incense, it's now to fry my eggs on a Sunday morning when I want to have breakfast. That's all I'm going to use it for. So that is a bittul of those items, and therefore they become mutter bahana. However, tekroves avodah zarah is going to be aser no matter what. Even if the nachri is mevatel and he says that yayin that was nisnasech lefnei avodah zarah is no longer yayin nesach, it doesn't matter. The nachri does not have the ability to say that. And logic is very pashut. When it comes to the other three categories, when we talk about the avodah zarah itself, the tashmishi avodah zarah, the noy avodah zarah, those things are all aser because of what they will be used for, meaning they are still set to be used for avodah zarah. So if you say, henceforth, this will not be used for avodah zarah, so good, so henceforth, it's going to be mutter bahana, not you. If a goy says that henceforth, it will not be used for avodah zarah, so now it's not an object of avodah zarah. But when it comes to Tikrovas Avodah Zarah, it's usher based on its history. It's usher based on the fact that it was used in the worship of Avodah Zarah. It was offered to the Avodah Zarah, and therefore it doesn't help that you're going to say, I'm no longer going to be Menasech. Guess what they normally did after they were Menasech in Avodah Zarah? They weren't Menasech it again. It was a one-time thing, but it remains usher forever. Now, based on that, Rav Shechter often likes to point out, there's a comment of the Darkei Tshuva that turns out Yatza Chumraso Kulaso over here, meaning or Kulaso Chumraso. Darkei Tshuva writes that when Catholics use wine in their religious ceremonies, so they believe that after they use wine and wafers, and they believe that after they say their, Rav Shechter often likes to point out, the hocus pocus, the term hocus pocus is really a mockery. It's a leitzonus of the Avodah Zarah, because whatever they say sounds a little bit like hocus, like the words hocus pocus. So we use the term hocus pocus to make a little bit of a leitzonus. Kol leitzonusa asura chutz mileitzonusa d'Avodah Zarah. Right? You're not allowed to make a leitzonus of things except for Avodah Zarah. You're supposed to make a leitzonus of. I always thought my elementary school principals were being very Rebbeim were being very immature when they would refer to Kratzmach and Yashko was cheese and crackers, and you know they would use these terminologies. They weren't being, maybe they were, I don't know, but I don't think they were being immature now. Now I realize they were probably just making a late sanus of Avodah Zarah, like you're supposed to. Chazal make a late sanus of Avodah Zarah. So hocus pocus is also a late sanus of Avodah Zarah. So what happens when they say they're hocus pocus? So in their belief, the wafer becomes the flesh of Jesus, and the wine becomes the blood of Jesus. Someone just texted me last week, are you allowed to say Jesus? So the answer is, as Rav Shechter has pointed out many times, and it's really posh, is yes, meaning that's not a name that was given to him. That's a shame. Shel Avodah Zarah. That was the name that was given him at his bris. Yikari Shemo B'Yisrael, Yeshu. But his second name. So that's a shame. Shel Avodah Zarah. That you're probably not supposed to say. Definitely not supposed to say. But to say his name. So it's not the yeshivish thing to do. You know, you don't walk around saying like every time you stub your toe, you don't invoke Yashka. But it's, there's nothing technically wrong with saying the name. So anyway, they believe that the wafer becomes Jesus' flesh and the wine becomes his blood. Now, if that's the case, says the Darkei Tshuva, the wine is becoming what? It's not that which is tekrovas Avodah Zarah, it's Avodah Zarah Atzma. Because they view it as the blood of Yashka himself. So it's the Avodah Zarah Atzma. So says the Darkei Tshuva, that's a kula. To say that it's not to Krovus Avodah Zarah, but it's Avodah Zarah, I mean, that means it's subject to Bittul, because it's not just to Krovus, according to Lishitosam, according to their Shita. So anyway, that is the basic background for the din of Stam Yenam, that Stam Yenam is really, really on account of Chasnus. It was just expanded on account of Yayin Nesach. Now, Stam Yenam, there is a major exception to the Isser of Stam Yenam, and that is Yayin Mevushal. The original Isser of Stam Yenam, again, was only for intermarriage, and really should have only been if manufactured by a non-Jew, and should really be only Asr B'Shtia, like we said. But once we add the concern of Nisuch, so that's what the Bali Atos points out, that we can add on wine that a non-Jew even poured, even if it's not his, and we add on an Isser Hana'a. So in the Beis HaMikdash, we assume that you're not allowed to use Yayin Mevushal al Gabe HaMizbeach, and the same is true, by the way, with Dam, that's Mevushal. You're not allowed to be Zorek Dam, that's Mevushal al Gabe HaMizbeach. That's why if Ashkenazim Paschal and Dam, that's Mevushal, is not even called Dam. That if you're Mevashal Dam, it's not even Aser Ba'achila on a Dor Raisa level. It's only an Isser Midrabanan. What the Shita Samachaber is about Dam Mevushal is a little bit more iffy, but the Shita Sarama is pretty clear that Dam Mevushal is not Dam on a Dor Raisa level. That's the famous Maisa. You know the Maisa with Reb Chaim Brisker and I guess it was Reb Chaim Telzer, one of the Telzers, that they met at a chasna once or something, and the Telzer Rav said to Reb Chaim Brisker, said to the Brisker Rav, I don't understand what's with all this fancy lumdus. What do you need all this fancy lumdus for? So the Brisker Rav said, Reb Chaim Brisker said, I know we call the Brisker Rav Revelvel as the Brisker Rav, but Reb Chaim Brisker said, you can't paskin halacha without lumdus. How could you ever paskin halacha without, you can't understand the halacha without lumdus. So what are you talking about? I can paskin all the halacha without any of your your briska lamdas. He said, okay, I'll ask you a simple shayla. You have two women that are each cooking in their own tats. One woman is a Jew, one is a non-Jew. The Jew is cooking kosher meat, the non-Jew is cooking nevela in her pot. And all of a sudden, a piece of meat comes flying out of the non-Jew's pot and lands in the Jewish woman's pot. A piece of nevela meat goes flying into the Jew's pot. It's definitely rove of kosher meat versus this one piece of nevela, but it was of indeterminate size, so they don't know if it's shishim or not. No, so what are you paskin? So he says, well, it's min b'mino. Min b'mino on a daraisa level, we paskin is batel barov. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, the min b'mino's mashu. We paskin mi daraisa's batel barov. We require shishim on a darabanan level, right? These are the ABCs of tarove, so it's good chazar. We require shishim on a darabanan level. You don't know if you have shishim, savik darabanan lukula. So Rav Chaim Brisker said, very good, except Mistama, the woman who was cooking the nevelas, also didn't do malicha on her meat, right? So Mistama, there's dam in there as well, and dam is min b'she'eno mino. So it's not min b'mino, it's min b'she'eno mino, and if it's min b'she'eno mino, then shishim is daraisa. So you have a savik daraisa l'chumra. So the Telzer, or whoever it was, said, Taka, a very good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking in terms of the dam. I wasn't thinking about how many dinim there are in this this piece of meat. So you're right. I changed my mind. I stand corrected. It is now going to be batel. Is now going to be a safik daraisa, safik daraisa l'chumra. So he said, but wait a second. Although probably she didn't do malicha, but the dam is mavushal. I said she was cooking the meat in a pot. Dam mavushal Ashkenazim Paskin, for sure, in Sfarda maybe, but dam mavushal Ashkenazim Paskin is not an issa daraisa at all of dam. It's only an issa drabanan. So you're weiter back to a safek drabanan, so we should say safek drabanan lakula. Says, that's a good point. I didn't think of that one either. You're right. It's a safek drabanan lakula because of the dam. He said, but wait, dam nevela is not only asur mishum dam. It's also asur mishum nevela, meaning every part of the nevela is also included in the isur nevela. So it's not only an isur dam, it's an isur nevela as well. So if the dam is min b'she'eno mino and it's got an isur daraisa of nevela, so then it's min b'she'eno mino savik daraisa l'chumra. So Taka, you're right. There are different versions of the story where the conversation goes on in another couple of steps. It's a good way to chazer a little bit of tarovis when you go through that that story. But the point of the story right now is that that which is mavushal is not brought on the mizbeach. That which is mavushal, dam mevushal is not kosher lezrika, dam mevushal is not really dam, and yayin mevushal is not brought on the mizbeach either. And to the extent that you're serious about, or just how serious you are about using wine for kiddush, that's royal lenaseh al gabei mizbeach. So many people are machmir to not have yayin mevushal for kiddush because it's not nesnaseh al gabei mizbeach. But just like we wouldn't use it al gabei mizbeach, the non-Jews wouldn't use it for Avodah Zarah either. So we're makel with the Yayin Mavushal, provided that a Jew produced the wine, a Jew manufactured the wine. Meaning, if you have a non-Jewish wine company that's mevashel their wine, that is of no utility to us. Why? Because a non-Jewish wine company that's mevashel the wine, you start the gzeiros mishum chasnus. It's got nothing to do with mevushel or eino mevushel. Mevushel is only mitam the yayin nesach shebo. What that helps with is the additional, the add-on that even if a non-Jew handled it along the way, mitam the yayin nesach, so you don't have to be choshish of that minuscule chashash of yayin nesach becomes even more minuscule when it's yayin mevushel, and therefore that goes away. So if a non-Jew manufactures the wine, then the fact that it's mevushel does not really help you because you still have the primary concern of chashash chasos. I mean, we'll talk in a moment about the idea of pasteurization perhaps being bishel. So what? We're going to say all non-kosher wines, if they're pasteurized, they're kosher? No, of course not. They're still included in that iser of chasnos. That's why Rav Shechter told us that when the conservative movement, the Vad HaLacha of the conservative movement, wrote a tshuva about Welch's grape juice, so they said they discovered that Welch's grape juice is pasteurized, and because of that, it's mutter to drink Welch's grape juice. It's not stam yenam. So they said Rav Soloveitchik came into yeshiva, and he was laughing at them. He said, it's such a ridiculous thing to say. So he said most of the boys in the shir had no idea what he was talking about. Okay, Rav Soloveitchik says it's ridiculous. I guess it's ridiculous, but why is it ridiculous? So So this is why. This is what he was so upset about, why he thought it was so absurd. The conservative Vada Halacha, according to Tshuvas HaRama, that they claimed had said the same thing. So Rav Shapta said all the boys in the Shir, Soloveitchik was not familiar with that Tshuvas HaRama, but they looked up the Tshuvas HaRama afterwards and they saw that's not at all what the Tshuvas HaRama said. What the Tshuvas HaRama actually talks about is that there's a Mishnah Maseches Bechoros that tells us that HaChoshel Al HaDavar is not Neman Al Osa Davar. Right? If you have a person who doesn't keep kosher, you can't trust him about kashrus. You have a woman who doesn't keep Taras HaMashpacha, so she can't be the mikvah lady. It doesn't just mean she doesn't keep, it means that she's Choshel, meaning that she's suspect of it. Let's say you have a woman who is a grusha, so she doesn't go to the mikveh anymore, or she's an almana, so she doesn't go to the mikveh anymore, but she's not chashud on Taras HaMishpacha. I remember Rabbi Rapp told me that in one of the local communities, there was a woman who's a grusha, who's a divorced woman, who happened to have been a mikveh lady, and some of the people complained, why is she involved in the mikveh? She's divorced. She said, and her response was, I'm involved in the Chevra Kedisha too, and I'm not even dead. So you don't have to be, you don't have to be that which you're working with. But a chashad al adavar, if someone is chashad about something, so then they're not allowed to, they're not trusted on that very issue that they're chashad on. So the Rama explains that apparently what used to happen is that the Jews in Poland would bring all their wine in from Italy. All the good wine comes from Italy. It was all manufactured in Italy. But it was manufactured by Jews in Italy. Problem is, the Jews who would manufacture the wine in Italy themselves would drink non-Jewish wine. They would drink Stam Yenam. So the Rama says, so wait a second. So now these Jews are Chashad al HaDavar. So are they Naman about the wine that you're bringing in, that they're producing? So the Rama's Mekel based on the following idea. He says that the Jews in Italy don't realize that what they're doing is wrong. Meaning they made the following cheshbon. They decided that, you know, there's this heter called pas palter, that when you have, even though you're not allowed to eat bread baked by an akum, baked by an achri, but if the bread is baked by a professional, by a baker, so then it's mutter. Now, why do we have a heter called pas palter? We don't have such a thing by bishul. We don't say, oh, if it's baked by a restaurant and they're just to make money, so then there's no chashash chasus. Why do we have by pas? Because the pasuk says ki lo alechem levado yichya adam, and Chazal modified the phrase a little bit, al alechem yichya adam, that maybe it's not only bread that, by which a person lives, but lechem is very much a part of how a person survives with lechem. It's such a staple, it's so critical, we cannot close off all of our primary sources of lechem, so they had to do it. So the Rama said, Mistama, the Jews in Italy, everyone's drinking wine in Italy, they didn't have even such great sources of clean drinking water. So whenever they were drinking, they were always drinking wine. So they probably figured a similar thing, that just like there's a heter of pas palter, because that's al alechem yichya adam, so they probably think to themselves that there's such a heter when it comes to stam yenam as well. They're wrong! There isn't any such heter when it comes to stam yenam. But they're not chashud al adavar, says the Rama, because they don't know that what they're doing is in fact wrong. They have a cheshbon why they think that it's right, and therefore the Yidden in Poland are allowed to drink the wine that they imported from Italy. That's all it says. That, it doesn't say that because it's pasteurized or whatever that it's mutter, that there's no stam yenam. Now, what about pasteurized wine? So you have a Jewish company that produces grape juice or produces wine. You have Kedem produces grape juice, right? So how is pasteurization the same as Bishul? So the Tzelem Rav used to give the Ashkacha, I think now it's a family member, gives the Ashkacha to the Kedem grape juice. So he required a boiling point of 212 degrees, that it has to be cooked up 212 degrees in order for it to be considered Mevushel. Pasteurization is less than that. I don't know exactly what temperature, 180 or something like that. Maybe Gabe knows how hot is pasteurization. You'll ask your phone, tell me if you find out. You know? Anyone know? Okay, so pasteurization is less, a lot less than 212 degrees. So the question is, does that qualify as bishul? So Ramesha felt very strongly that it does qualify as bishul. He says that, you know, it's a beferish in Shulchan Aruch. Really, Shulchan Aruch quotes a pesach of the Ar Zarua that when it comes to bishul b'Shabbos, the Gemara says that there are three types of items that are subject to bishul. There's food, there's drink, and there's things, like non-edibles, non-edible things like wood and you know and metal and things like that, and each have their own shear of bishul. So when it comes to bishul of food, so kemachal ben drusai, as long as you cook it up to the point that it's edible, you violated the yisod ha'raisa of bishul. When it comes to a drink, so yad saledes, when you cook it up to the point of yad saledes, that's bishul. When it comes to wood or tar or whatever, so then the shear is till you change its form, that it used to be very hard and now you've softened it, or it used to be soft and now you've hardened it, right? That's what we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, that's considered to be bishul on things that are not edible. So when we discuss cooking water, the Gemara says hechshero zeu bishulo, the Gemara discusses whether hechshero zeu bishulo or hechshero lo zeu bishulo, and the Gemara says maybe hechshero lo zeu bishulo, that it's not just bishul, is not just as hard as you want it, but it needs to actually get to yad soled dispo, not just hard enough to drink, but yad soled dispo. So that's what we paskin, that's yad soled dispo, that's the definition of bishul when it comes to stam yenam as well. How much is yad soled dispo? So Shmir Shabbos Gilchsa did the famous calculation based on the base hashchita of a goose, where the Gemara says that that's not yad soled dispo, so that's 113 degrees, so he assumes 114 degrees is anything under 114 degrees is not yad soled dispo, but above that might be yad soled dispo. Okay, whatever the number, most assume it's higher than that, that it's l'chumra, you would assume it's 120 degrees. Rav Salvechik held it was somewhere between 140 and 160. And Rav Meisha points out that certainly the high end of yad soled, there's some range, right, that we have to be machmir within, but even on the high end, Rav Meisha writes 170, 175, 165, he has different tshuvas where he says slightly different things, but it's way less than 212 degrees. So pasteurization is not 212 degrees, but it is enough to be mavushal according to Rav Meisha. So the kedem wines that are pasteurized, some of them will say non-mavushal, but halal, halachically, they really are mevushal. It's just because the Tzel Merav held their non mevushal, but really halachically, they were considered to be mevushal. So it takes Louis Pasteur was a scientist, and he came up with the idea of removing all of the bacteria by cooking it up. So it removes the bacteria from the from whatever beverages you have that are pasteurized, your milk or whatever else. If you go to a farm and you drink the milk straight out of the cow, it even tastes a little bit different. It's a fresher kind of a milk, but they can't sell it like that because you got to sell pasteurized milk, so it doesn't have, so people don't get sick from drinking the milk. So they pasteurize the wine also to remove the bacteria from the wine. Now this leads us to the discussion of regifting non-kosher wine. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Chav Gimel, you know, Hilchos Yayin Nesach begins in Kuf Chav Gimel and goes through Kuf Lam Ches. There's a lot of pages in Shulchan Aruch about Hilchos Yayin Nesach. So obviously we're just touching on a very few items over here. But the Shulchan Aruch says that it's also to get Hana'ah from Stam Yenam. And the Rama quotes, right, the Shulchan Aruch right at the beginning, Stam Yenam Shal Am Mimov Dik Chavim Asur Bahana'ah. Even if they touch our wine, and says the Rama, Mishum Gzeres Yain Shinis Nasich Lelilim, Ubizmana Zesh, Sheino Shriach Shumos Menaskim Lavos Chavim. Nowadays, says the Rama, that it's totally not common for them to be Menasik Lavos Zara, Yeshomrim de Magovid Chavim Yain Shalanu, Eino Asurbana, Rakbishtia. Some say that the Israel Na'ah no longer is applicable as long as it's our wine that they touched. And their own stam yenom is not aser bana. So if they owe you money, you're allowed to collect in lieu of the money stam yenom, because otherwise it's being matzil, because that's considered to be matzil miyadam. Otherwise, the money was going to be lost. Any other loss that you that's important. I shouldn't have read that so fast. Any other loss, like avar vakana, you accidentally bought non-kosher wine, so now you have to throw out the whole case of wine that you bought. No, you're allowed to return it to the store and get your money back. Or omachar, or you sold it, aval chachila asul leknoso lemachro kedei lestakerbo, but you're not allowed to use it lechachila as a way of making money. V'yesh mekilin gam bazeh, and the Rama says, and some are making even on that. So you have the Shulchan Aruch says Asur Banah. The Rama saying, yeah, you show him that it's not Asur Banah, but it's really not the right thing to do to, unless it's B'makom Hefsid, it's not the right thing to do to get Hana from it. And Yesh Mekilin, even the Chachila, to go in to get Hana from it. And then he says, but V'tov Lahach, it's better to be Mafnir. Oh, what are the questions over here? I can't see the top one side of these questions. It's like stuck in the... how long does wine have to be above Yatsa as count as Mavushal? Is being at that temperature just... I think so. I think even just a quick moment at that temperature is enough. I think so. What is happening right at the top?
The temperature from
past radiation. Oh, temperature, okay. Oh, from Wikipedia. Okay, very good. So, now... The Taz writes that Nachrim Bizmanazar are just Minagav Hosein B'Yadayim, and that's why the Ramah so Mekel over here. The Nachrim don't really believe in any of the Avodah Zarahs anyway. So it seemed clearly, you're not allowed to buy non-kosher wine to go and give it as a gift or to do business with it. But if you received it as a gift, you know, so then Yesh Ladum, is that called B'makom Hafsid? Right? Im Avar V'kana, if you accidentally bought it, it's considered a makom Hafsid. So is receiving it as a gift a makom Hafsid? When I asked our Rashi Yeshiva, they thought that it's not called the Makom Hafsid. I asked from Shechter, from Neuberger, from Sobolovsky, they all thought that that's not called the Makom Hafsid. Makom Hafsid, you spent money on it. If you got it as a gift, you didn't spend money, so you spend $8 on a kosher bottle of wine, and you'll give the kosher bottle of wine to your co-workers. The Chachmas Adam in Simin in Klal Ayin Hay says that generally L'chadchila Tzroi L'asar, because most poskim assume nowadays that Stam Yenam is Asar Bana, and he says Kol Bal Nefesh Yachmir V'yatzliach, that even though the Ramah is a little more makil, you can't be mocha biyad makilim because the Ramah is a little more makil, especially since Anius Mitsuya, says Chachmas Adam, people are so very poor in his time, but a Bal Nefesh should still be machmir, and he'll see that he'll have great Hatzlacha. And again, if a Nachri produced the wine, the fact that it's pasteurized is not really of any great value to us. There's also an issue of schara with machalos asuros in general. You're not supposed to do schara with machalos asuros, but as we know from the sugya in Maseches Pesachim on Daf Chaf Dalid, that when it's nizdaminla, when you just happen to encounter, and we just discussed the other day, right, with the treifas in the chicken factory. So when it's nizdaminla, so then you're allowed to do schara with the machalos asuros. I was going to get into the wine making process a little bit, but maybe we'll skip that. We'll come back to it if there's time, and we'll go to some more practical elements over here. Very often, what will happen is you'll have an open bottle of wine in your refrigerator, and then you discover that the housekeeper came today and cleaned out the fridge. So she removed everything from the fridge, wiped everything down, cleaned everything up, and put back the wine. The wine is not sealed. So there is a common misconception that people have that if the housekeeper picked up the bottle of wine and moved it, that it is now usser. That is, in fact, not true in halacha. There's no isser for on the wine that a nachri has transported the bottles that the wine is holding. That is not a thing. Tosfos points out that even if the wine isn't closed and they move it from one place to another, it's not usser. Only if they stick their fingers in the wine or stick a stick in the wine and shake it up that way or put a cup in the vat to taste the wine, only then is it going to be usser. The Gemara says that if a non-Jew pours the wine, that's called kocho, and we make a gezera, that will be usser. So that's usser on a drabban level. But and this is important. The reason it's important to know this kula is not because Taru Chasal Mon Shal Yisrael, you shouldn't have to pour out your bottle of wine, but very often people have Shemitah wine in their fridge. It probably shouldn't, but we do. I mean, they probably shouldn't leave Eretz Yisrael, but it does, you know, with whatever it is, whatever heterim that are employed in order to get Shemitah wine out of Eretz Yisrael. So is next year a Shemitah year again? When's the next Shemitah year? So when they have Shemitah wine in your fridge, then the halacha is you're not allowed to be mafsid peros of shavias. So you can't destroy it. So you're going to say, oh no, Nachri touched it, I better pour it down the drain. Pouring it down the drain is an aveira. You're not allowed to pour it down the drain. So you can't be overly machmir on this issue. They sell all sorts of contraptions, these locks and things like that on the wine. I don't know why those are really necessary, unless you really think the Nachri is pouring. And if you think the Nachri is pouring the wine, when you give ashkacha, when people give ashkacha on wine, that's where it's really an issue. That's where it gets really difficult. meaning they don't pasteurize the wine until, even though the winery is owned by a Jew, but they have Nachrim working there very often. And the pasteurization very often happens at the very end of the process. Even if pasteurization is Bishul, there's a lot that goes on in between. And there's tasting, and there's other things that go on. So you have to make sure that there are a lot of a lot of Jewish workers, a lot of mashkichim around to see to it that no one is doing anything to affect the wine at any point in the wine development. The blending and the standardizing, whatever it is, the sampling of the wine, hamshacha that they do to just push the wine along. So you have to be very careful in all of these areas. What about a mechal shabbos farhesed? What if you have someone who is a Jew? Do they aser your wine? So the entire iser of a nachri handling wine is really only for somebody who's connected in some way to avodah zarah. But a Jew's mechal shabbos farhesed, an apikores halach is dino kenachri. A Jew who worships avodah zarah is dino ka'akam also. So he can't write tefillin for you or something like that. A mechal shabbos farhesed b'mezid, who doesn't care who's watching, he's mechal shabbos farhesed, he's also dino kenachri. So the Gemara, for example, in Masechta Shabbos talks about, you have a guy who's wearing his signet ring on Shabbos, which he's not allowed to do, but then when he sees the chachamim, when he sees the rabbi, he covers up the signet ring. So that's not a mechal shabbos farhesed, because he has busha in front of certain people. So there's a famous shita, the Chuvas Bin Yitzion, the Chazon Ish made it even more famous, where there were so many Reformed Jews in Germany, Bin Yitzion was the Aruch Liner, famous German posek, that you can't consider a mechal shabbos farhesed, because they're not going against communal standards. Most of the community was reformed. So Rav Shechter pointed out, the Munkach Rebbe disagreed. Of course he disagreed. He lived in Munkach. You know, if you live in Williamsburg, you don't see that the most of the people are not religious. So in a chinami, in Munkach, it would be a din of Mechal HaShabbos Farhesed, even if in Germany it was would not have a din of Dino Kenachri. So if a Jew is Mechal HaShabbos Farhesed, but let's say he has no connection to Avodah Zarah, so is that going to make the wine treif? So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank pointed out that it's really beferish in Shulchan Aruch that anybody who doesn't believe in Torah Shebal Peh will passel the wine. And even though l'chora, someone who doesn't believe in Torah Shebal Peh has no sheiches to avodah zarah, he just doesn't believe in Torah Shebal Peh. That was the story that happened, that there was a rabbi in Hoboken, New Jersey, a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Chaim Hershenson, was a Yelid Yerushalayim. He grew up as a Yerushalmi Jew, so he had a Sheikhus of Tzipesa Frank, and he published a psak that Mechal HaShabbos Farhesed does not asr the wine. And Tzipesa Frank wrote him a letter that one of the midos of Chachamim is to be moda when you're wrong, so you should exercise that right to get up and be moda that you made a terrible mistake. It's directly against what it says in Shulchan Aruch, and that's what we generally paskin like. Now, all of this brings us to other beverages. So I just gave a shiur yesterday, actually, in my series on Rav Moshe and his halachic adversaries on Rav Teitz, Zichrono Livracha. That's what made me think about doing wine today, because I was talking about this stuff anyway, and I left like no time to actually talk about blended whiskey, which was the major machlokas, because I heard so many great stories about Rabbi Teitz, so I just had to share. I spoke to Rabbi Bini Blau, who has great stories about his grandfather. So if you want some good stories, you have some downtime, you could listen to that shiur. But the last 10 minutes is all I had left to talk about blended whiskey, so that was like no time at all to talk about that. So if you look in Igros Moshe, Yeridei Chelek Aleph, Simin, I think, Samach Beis through Samach Dalid, Rav Moshe has a series of tshuvas to Rav Teitz. Rav Teitz, of course, was the Rav of Elizabeth, New Jersey, not the founding Rav. Rav Prail was the founding Rav, that was his father-in-law. But Rav Teitz really built Elizabeth. He came, there was no yeshiva, there was no mikveh, there was no nothing. There was a shul, and that was it. And he built up the whole place. So it wasn't easy to build the place, to build the community that time in America. So anyways, Rav Teitz was machmir about blended whiskey. Blended whiskey is whiskey that they have some additives in the whiskey. So Rav Teitz held it needed hashkacha, and he gave hashkacha. The Shulchan Aruch in Simon Kuf Yudal Tzivav writes that Sarach Lizar Vilivdok Vilach Kor Beshechar Ubemashka Shaldva Shalsum of the Chav Makshav Im Nosnam Shmarm Shalyay, that you need to check whatever beverages you're going to get from of the Chavim to make sure that there's no wine in there. And the Rama adds that if you put wine in the drink, you're going to need shishim in order to be mevatalit. And if it's avida l'tayma, then forget it. Afilu be'elef lo batal if it's avida l'tayma. So wine and grape juice that are not specially prepared, you know, under rabbinic supervision, are a real problem. They are not kosher, like we just got through saying. So if you have pure whiskey, there's no doubt. You know, grain-based alcohol, no doubt. It's fundamentally usher. But American law permits the producers of whiskey to include blenders from other ingredients. How much? Up to 2.5% of the beverage can be other ingredients. What's shishim? Shishim is 1.66%, if I'm not mistaken. So 2.5% is more than shishim. And it's avida l'tayma. Whatever you're putting in there is avida l'tayma. So l'chaura, argued Rav Taitz, you don't have bittel, and the blenders that they would use are very often glycerin from that, which could very well come from an animal. You know, glycerin is not always from a vegetable origin. It could come from an animal, which would be nevela, or non-kosher wine. So in Hapardes, in the journal Hapardes, in the year 5710, Rav Taitz said that he was talking to his good friend Rav Lazer Silver, and Rav Lazer Silver told him, alerted him to this problem, and he said, Taka, it's a problem. Rav Lazer Silver was the president of the Agudas HaRabbanim. So he was a character also. He was a huge Talmud Chacham. I think Rav Shechter told us that when Rav Soloveitchik first came to give a shiur in this country, in America, so they invited him to speak to the Agudas HaRabbanim at the time. He wasn't yet a member of Mizrahi. I'm going to click not now, whatever the phone is asking to do. He was not yet a member of Mizrahi, and he was giving a shiur in Yuma. And they warned him in advance. Rav Lazer Silver's in the audience. He knows Yuma backwards and forwards baltet. So be very careful of what you say. You know, this is you have a real Adam Gadol there. So Rav Lazer Silver was an outstanding Jewish leader. I think Rabbi Rakefet wrote a book about Rav Lazer Silver, the Silver Era. Also Rav Lazer Silver was one of the only two people when Rabbi Taitz started giving the radio show. So everyone said, what a shegetz, how can he teach Torah on the radio? That's makom tumah that you're bringing the Torah into, and who knows how many goyim are going to be listening to the Yiddish shir that he's giving on the radio, and it's you know, what a terrible thing. So he was really attacked, so he needed letters from the Gedolei Torah to defend his practice. He wrote his own letter, because he's also got the Torah to explain why it's mutter, but he got from Ramesh and from Rav Lazer Silver. Those are the two people that he went to who told him that it's okay. He had 250,000 people would listen to his radio show every week. It's really just absolutely remarkable. As his son, Rav Lazer Meir Taitz, said, he was quantitatively the greatest Marbitz Torah of his generation. Quantitatively. So anyway, so in Hapardes he writes that Ilchari have a real problem. Minchas Yitzchak raised the additional problem, and even though Minchas Yitzchak ultimately is making on it in Chelik Beis Minchav Ches about sherry cask whiskey, that they age it in sherry cask. Someone just sent me, a guy in my shul, a good friend of mine, sent me an email last week that someone, he's a lawyer, and he got a gift from somebody of not a scotch aged in sherry casks, but a wine aged in whiskey cask. He said he didn't even know that's a thing, that they do that. But apparently they do. That was stam, a tray for wine. He couldn't do anything with it anyway, but he said it was just like eye-opening. And what does that tell you about the role of the sherry cask? As we're going to soon see, that's not so poshut. So anyway, Rabbi Taitz pointed out, Shulchan Aruch in Yardesim Kovlamidei says that a kli that once had non-kosher wine, which is much more common nowadays than actual blenders, discusses how to get rid of the tam from the kli. But in Simchut Lam Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch says that if you put kosher wine in such a kli, it's aser. But other drinks like beer in such a kli would be mutter. Why? If you put beer in a sherry cask, would it be mutter? Because the sherry is no sin tam lefgam. The wine, the yayin of the akum, of the nachri, is no sin tam lefgam. Who wants the tam of yayin in their beer? So since it's no sin tam lefgam, that's why it's mutter. So says Rabbi Taitz. But if it's no sin tam lefgam, if they charge twice the price because they age it in a sherry cask, it's hard to say that's no sin tam lefgam. It's a barrel that they kept, that they aged wine in for many years. So the barrel itself has like tam of yayin that's nivla in the dofne kli. So that when they then take those barrels and they'll age the whiskey or the scotch in those barrels, and then they'll sell it for a much higher price because apparently it's much higher quality. So you'll see on the advertisements of very high end scotch that it's aged in sherry casks. So much so that what they found is that there's such a thing as a first-generation sherry cask, a second-generation sherry cask, and a third-generation. Just to be able to say that they use sherry casks for the marketing, they'll sometimes have many generations of whiskey. They'll age Glenlivet 21. I don't know if Glenlivet 21 actually is aged in sherry. I'm just picking a stump. They'll age Glenlivet for 21 years, the sherry cask, then move it out and put more in. How much time could be left in it? And then a third generation. And sometimes they'll get these sherry casks, and they'll rip them apart and put a piece of a sherry cask into another brand new barrel, because that way you could turn one sherry cask into 15 sherry casks, and they'll do that as well. So obviously there's, in some of these cases, there's very, very little tamayin, and it's all about marketing in some of these cases, but you have to be, you know, you have to be mevarer what's what. So Rabbi Teitz thought that there's not really much reason to be mekel. Some suggest that no, there's no tam of yayin in the scotch, it's the reyach of yayin in the scotch, reichalav milsa, and therefore it's mutter. Others said, no, Minchas Yitzchak writes that if you ask the experts, they'll tell you that it's not the tam of yayin that you're trying to get into the scotch. What you're trying to do is that the barrel itself, gives a little bit of a tampogum into the scotch. To neutralize the tampogum of the barrel, that's the value of the sherry. The value of the wine that's nivla in the Dofnei Akli neutralizes the tam of the barrel. You can ask 10 experts, you know, who produce scotch, high end, and 5 of them will tell you it's to neutralize, and 5 of them will tell you it's to be no sin tam. It's a machlokas in the industry. All they know is that that's what they're supposed to do, because that's a mesorah from the Friyud Kedairis, that's what you're supposed to, that's how you make the best scotch. But their chemists aren't even sure exactly. I mean, they are sure, but half of them say one way and half of them say the other way. So exactly what the role is. Now, what about the rules of Bittel? So Rabbi Teitz pointed out, forget about Bittel. Even if you did have Shishim, you're doing it on purpose. The same about L'nisir L'chadchila. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Kuf Lamed Daled, Sif Yud Gimel, that Kol HaMashkim Shel Lecham Shedarkam La'ariv Bem Yayin L'chometz Asurim. That if it's the derech to mix in Yayin L'chometz, and it's going to be Asur. So you shouldn't also set up a situation where you know where a non-kosher item is going to become Bittel. That's Bittel L'sul Chachila Yardaya Siman Saditas. The Rav Moshe argued. Rav Moshe in Yardei Chelek Aleph writes, you know, first of all, he says you got to be mekel over here because he says that it was very important to confirm the kula because there are a lot of chashuva rabbanim and a lot of very religious balabatim that drink whiskey all the time and whiskey never had hashgacha. So Rav Moshe writes that he personally didn't. He personally would avoid drinking it. He says Ashani Matir. Even though I think it's mutter, nizra ani ba'atzmi milishtos blended. I don't drink blended whiskey. Rak bechabura shelo lemechzi kiyuara. Says unless I'm with some chevra, so then it's going to be mechzi kiyuara if everybody else is having a l'chaim, and I'm not going to partake of a l'chaim. Wow. That's something. First of all, I don't know when Rav Moshe would ever be in the chevra. That's shooting down whatever you call it, taking down shots. But Rav Moshe, if I'm in the chevra, there's so I don't want Mexiki. You would think he's Rav Moshe. He could be Mexiki. No one's going to question him. Rav Moshe doesn't want to drink. He wants a clear head to paskin halachos. But nevertheless, he says he doesn't want to take on that chumrah in public, but in private he takes on that chumrah. He writes Rav Teitz, you're doing a great thing, it's a wonderful mitzvah, that for those who want to be machmir unnecessarily, you're giving them a great service and being machmir for them. But, he says, it's unnecessary. Why is it unnecessary? So the Shach in Siman Kuf Yudal at Sivkan Chathal of Paskins, that Stam Yenam is Drabanan. So if even some of the whiskey is not blended with wine, we can assume Savi Drabanan Lukula. Meaning if not every brand is blended with wine, some of them are not blended with wine, so each brand that you have is a Savi Drabanan Lukula. That's one argument. Rabbi Bleich points out in Contemporary Halacha Halacha Problems, Volume 5, where he has a very thorough article on the whiskey brouhaha, I think is what he called it. So he writes over there that that's difficult to apply nowadays. So the information is very easy to find out. The distillers will tell you, happily, if there's any wine in it, because adraba, that's an improvement of the product. They're happy to tell it to you. So to say that it's just a suffix is hard to do. The other tzad the hakel, the main tzad the hakel, really is Rav Moshe writes, Shulchan Aruch writes in Kuf Lamed Daled Sif Hey, that non kosher wine is batel not b'shishim but b'shisha. So if all you're allowed to add in is up to 2.5%, that's way, way, way less than shisha. There is a significant machlokas as to whether this kula is only about water, when water mixes with wine, or if any liquid mixes with wine. The Nekudas HaKesef and Siman Kuf Yudalit and the Mati Yohonas and Abinus Naibshitz holds that it's only by water, whereas the Magen Avraham and Orachaim Siman Reish Dalit, the Pri Chadosh in Yerodeya Kuf Yudalit, Machs HaShekel in Orachaim Siman Reish Dalit, the Taz and Siman Kuf Yudalit all say that no matter what liquid the wine mixes with, it's batel b'shisha. The very kula that it's batel b'shisha is also subject to debate, meaning not only is there a debate as to when we apply batel b'shisha, is it only when it mixes with water, even when mixed with other beverages, there's a machlokas whether it's ever batel b'shisha. And guess what? The Ramah in Kuf Chav Gimel Siv Ches is machmir. The Ramah is machmir that it's not batel b'shisha, but the Shach is mekel. So since the Shach is mekel and the Shach very often carries the day, Rav Meisha thought we could pass like the Shach, but he's being doubly mekel, right? He's being mekel that the kula exists, like the mechaber and the Shach against the Ramah. And he's being makel that the kula exists not only when it's with water, but even when it's with other beverages. So Rav Meisha thought that we can be makel. Rav Teitz, and really nowadays the OU is machmir. I mentioned my shir yesterday that I wasn't sure about the other kashrus organizations. A good friend of mine is a caterer, Moshe David. He texted me that he believes that the CRC is also machmir, which I'm pretty sure I remember seeing a list, so I'm pretty sure they're also machmir, but that the Star K, Rabbi Heinemann Shlita, is more makel on these issues, more like Rav Meisha, less like Rav Teitz, which is not so surprising. So Rav Meisha writes, not only that, he says, even the Nekudas HaKesef is only machmir to require shishim when wine mixes with other non-alcoholic beverages. But when mixed with alcoholic beverages, then it would only need shisha. I mean, even the Nekudas HaKesef, who says that it's not going to work with anything but water, that's in the world of non-alcoholic beverages. So you need shisha if you're mixing orange juice with wine or something like that. But with alcoholic beverages, for sure, it's only going to need shisha. The idea is that it's more easily bottled. The Matayonasan thought that water is an exception because wine doesn't really enhance water. Rav Meisha says that that's not true at all. Wine absolutely doesn't enhance water, and therefore it's still going to be batel b'shisha. And Rav Meisha holds that the heter of shisha really has nothing to do with tam pagum. It's just that wine loses its character more readily than other drinks lose their character. So even though the Shach and Siman Kuf Lamed Daled writes that a tavshil requires shishim, Rav Meisha said whiskey's a drink, it's not a tavshil, so you don't need shishim. I mean, this heter of batel b'shisha is only in a liquid. So we have this machlokas. Any liquid? Okay, so that machlokas we discussed. But it's definitely not in a food. In a food, it's going to require shishim, not shisha. So I said, good, whiskey's a liquid, it's not a food. Ayein sefer b'ikve atzon, where Rav Shechter makes the argument based on the Kashuk Lover, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frumer, and based on Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that scotch and whiskey are a food, and that's the basis the Kashuk Lover writes of what the Hasidic minig is, that they make kiddush on Shabbos morning on a little shot of scotch, way less than a revius. Why? Because a revius is only necessary if you're having a drink. But if you're having a food, you only need a kazayas. So a little 1 ounce shot glass is a kazayas. So good. So it's since it's a food, what makes it a food? You wouldn't drink it if you're thirsty. You only drink it if you want to get into a certain state of mind or whatever. You drink it for other reasons, not for it to quench a thirst. Male, it's a food. Meaning, nafkamina would be like, is soup a food or a drink? So Rav Shechter would argue that soup is a food, it's not a drink. Nafkamina for bracha achrona. That's what the Taz writes in Or HaChaim. That do you say a bracha achrona, when you have a drink, you have to have in order to say bracha achrona, you have to drink a revius b'shir shtias revius. B'kidei shtias revius. the amount of time that it takes to drink a revius. So you get no extra time. When it comes to a food, it's kazayas, bichtei achilas pras. So you get a lot of extra time. So what about soup? Is it revius, bichtei shtias revius? The Taz writes, no, that it's a food. So Rav Shachta thought that the same is true when it comes to scotch. Of course, he pointed out that that's a terrible heter, really, for the Hasidim to make Kiddush on it, because in order to make Kiddush on it, it needs to be Chamar Medina. So there is discussion. What qualifies something as Chamar Medina? You know, is it something they have to be Mechabit Orchim with? Is it something that has to be the primary beverage that you have at meals? Whatever that discussion is, one thing everybody seems to agree, it's got to be a drink. That if it's not a drink, then it's not Chamar Medina. If it's a food, you know. So, as Rav Shachta points out, the Kosher Glover gave such a good explanation that he ruined his own heter because it took scotch out of the category. But anyway, that's against Rav Meisha. So, Rav Meisha rejects all the claims about Bittul Issur L'Chatchila because the problem of Bittul Issur L'Chatchila is when a Jew does so for Jews. Even if a Jew owns the company, they're doing it for the majority of their customers. The majority of the customers are not Jewish. Maybe if you have a particular brand of schnapps that's known to be a very Jewish brand. I don't know. You know, I don't know how big these companies are. But you go to a Kiddush in Lawrence sometimes and you wonder if the majority is... it looks like the majority is right there. It's right there on the table. But I don't know how big... I mean, I was sitting next to a rabbi from Lawrence. Well, I don't mean to pick on Lawrence, but it's true. I was sitting next to a rabbi from Lawrence once at Mechiras Chametz by Rabbi Willig. And he said, look at this. And he shows me one guy's shtar, a regular private balabas. Estimated value of your scotch, $150,000. Estimated value of his scotch. So I don't know. Maybe to say it's only made for non-Jews, or it's largely made for non-Jews. Okay, but I assume it's a larger market. Rav Meisha writes, though, if you hold that stam yenam is asher b'hanoah b'zman hazeh, right? That's kuf chav gimel al. That's machlokes mechaber ramah. Right, if you hold that it's also b'hanah b'zman hazeh, like the mechaber, then there's much more room to be machmir. But if you hold mikra din, the Ramah is really right, then it's a mutter b'hanah, so there's less room to be machmir. So the tzadim lahakel, there are many, many tzadim lahakel. It's interesting that this machlokas between Rav Moshe and Rav Teitz, it seems that the OU paskin like Rav Teitz, for whatever reason. It could be changes that Rabbi Blau suggested, Rabbi Bini Blau suggested that there are changes in the Metzias as well, that the OU just didn't take Rav Teitz's Shita over Rav Meisha's Shita, probably about being Mevarer certain Metzias that they were able to do. Okay, so we'll stop there. And Bez Hashem on Wednesday, I don't know yet, maybe we'll talk about fish. Can you buy salmon at Costco and related such topics? Good. Any other suggestions for kashrus topics? You had a few, right? You had a few suggestions. Prime, anything? Mrs. Lee's Baritz, maybe Shemitah?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right? So, okay. Yeah, we'll see. Good. Have a great day, everybody.